No one will act until you decide, Vuma said. It was an angle I had not considered before this meeting. I had guessed that whoever was organizing attempts on my life was doing so to thwart the breeding process, either out of jealousy for my father's power or because they realized their tribe would not benefit from my offspring. Vuma's words made my mind scatter with possibilities. Anyone who wanted war between our tribes would want me dead as soon as possible to expedite the process. Or they might want me to choose a mate for my own tribe to erode any possibility of a truce. It sounds like you wish me to delay in choosing.
For now, yes. But this strategy cannot leave this room. We have to appear from all outside gossip to be angry at how long your decision is taking. All of my communication to your mother and our current dialogue has been to that effect.
I noticed that the servants were no longer in the room and had not been present since my father began to speak.
But keeping your suitors around creates complications the chieftain already hinted at. Earlier, your father asked your opinion about humans, Glusit said.
His words were careful and calculated. I had once thought him a fool, but his actions over the last few years gave me reason to believe he was one of the smartest of the elders.
You answered truthfully, and your honesty reveals what most of our kind believes of the slave race. They are weak, dumb, and have very little use beyond simple work in houses and the fields.
The elders nodded at his words, and the old elven continued,
But they are loyal to their masters. They are terrified of punishment. Nonetheless, it is our duty to the dead gods to ensure that they are put to good use. What if they could serve as our defenders?
I don't see how. They are weak and slow. Most of them cannot even balance on their hands. They were getting close to telling me what was actually happening in the training fields, and I was going to continue to feign ignorance of their plans. They didn't need to know I had eyes and ears everywhere in our land.
What if their strength could be enhanced? What if they could be trained to fight even better than our own kind?
He asked. I wouldn't believe it.
We have found a way,
my father said. How?
Magic, Delucid replied. Ancient magic that dates back to the time when the dead gods lived. We are able to infuse it into humans, and they were able to perform incredible feats of strength and speed. In some cases, they are as strong as we are.
I have never heard of such a thing. Where did you find such magic? I knew they were experimenting on humans and giving them combat training, but Reliata had not learned of the magic from her network of observers.
There are several ruins in our lands. They were once proud cities and villages that our ancestors inhabited in the time of the gods. When they were betrayed by the humans, the cities were destroyed. Most are overgrown with foliage and have litter to offer us. One, however, a few hours' ride to the south, had an underground complex filled with ancient texts and devices.
I nodded at his words and immediately wanted to visit the place. I had never been interested in the lore of our people, but the idea of exploring a ruined city and finding unseen treasures sounded like an interesting break from entertaining my suitors.
The language of our ancestors does not translate well into our current spoken word, but I have been able to glean enough understanding of the process to begin my experiments. It has occupied most of my time for the last 5 years. The experiments finally produced results a few months ago, and we have begun training some of our new human stock,
Delucid continued. Training an army takes space. It will be hard to keep it a secret for long, I said.
Exactly,
my father nodded.
We would like your help in ensuring that none of your suitors or maidens finds out about our endeavor.
What about the legends? I smirked before taking a long drink from my wine glass.
What of them?
Glusit asked. Humans killed the gods and then were punished. We are the enforcers of their slavery. It is why we have access to the world, I replied.
Well, that is one story. Perhaps it is true. Perhaps it is not.
Delucid shrugged his shoulders. I could sense a shift in the room and smell the scent of bad citrus from Nyella, and she was worried. Do you deny the existence of the dead gods? I almost laughed. I never imagined I would be discussing religion with any of my father's elders. I could not do much more debating on the subject. The gods had never interested me. Whether they had lived or not, the undisputed fact was that they were now dead and held no power over me.
I fail to see how these humans and the dead gods are connected. Our new slaves are strong, fast, difficult to kill, and loyal beyond what you might believe. They are the ultimate weapon. But if we continue on this path, our tribe can realize power and prestige beyond what our ancestors even dreamed.
Delucet's voice grew passionate, and the room filled with the scent of honey. You are really too stupid to see the connection. When humans had the powers of the world, they killed the gods. We were tasked with overseeing them to prevent this from happening again. Giving them this power is a direct violation of the wishes of the gods, dead or not. The other tribes will intervene if they discover what you are doing. And they may be correct to do so. I set the wine glass down and laced my fingers together on the table. This may actually provoke all the neighboring tribes to form an alliance to attack us. You may even bring the wrath of all the elven people unto our tribe for playing with the power the gods entrusted to our race. The honey scent quickly went rancid.
Daughter,
the chieftain said, and the attention in the room shifted to him.
The rewards we will reap vastly outweigh the risks you speak of. As long as you can keep your friends away from the training grounds, we will have enough of a head start to solidify our power.
I would like some time to consider your words. Perhaps dessert should be served while I think.
Very well,
my father said. He got up from his seat and left the room through the doors to the kitchen. Zarmo turned to speak to me, but I raised my finger to cut off his words and leaned back in my chair. There was a risk to this endeavor. I knew that well enough. The question really was one of how much that risk could impact my own life. If another tribe did find out about these humans, the Laxiel tribe would be massacred. I was certain of this. However, I doubted that I would be included in such a genocide. I was the only single-born alive, and I could pretend to be ignorant of these experiments. A war council of tribal leaders would be happy to look the other way to preserve my life. On the other hand, if this experiment went as my father and Delucet predicted, the Laxiel tribe would enjoy a healthy dose of power. While we were the strongest tribe within a few days' horse ride, there were many other tribes more powerful than my father's family. Humans spread plentifully and quickly. If they were as strong and loyal as Delucet believed, we could easily create a fighting army of several hundred thousand in a few decades. We would be unstoppable. Even if the other tribes later copied our strategy, our head start would give us a tremendous advantage that they might never be able to match. The door to the dining hall opened, and a stream of servants entered to clear plates and lay out dessert. Smoky chocolate drifted to my nose, and I took my attention from my mental scenarios and paid heed to the cake laid out on my plate. It was a masterpiece covered with sharp-smelling mint and ripe raspberries. After the servants cleared the room, we began to enjoy the cake. I let several minutes pass and did not indulge any of the elders with a look or a scent that might confirm my decision. "I have considered what you have told me," I finally said. They looked up from their desserts eagerly. "I will agree to your plans and support your efforts by delaying my selection of a mate. I will also do what I can to keep my suitors and maidens from the fields you are using to conduct this work. I cannot be everywhere at once, so you will have to do some of your own guard work to prevent them or their staff from wandering astray."
"We can deal with that,"
my father nodded. He smiled broadly, and the scent of the room took on the honey aroma again. "I have a few conditions, though," I said to cut off the pleasant smell.
"They are?"
"Private, for you and I to discuss alone. Now that your elders have finished their dessert, perhaps they can leave us to work out the details?" I glanced at the older elvens. A few, like Vuma and Delucet, looked annoyed that I wished to speak with my father alone. The others smelled grateful to be done with the conversation. All rose from the table and bowed slightly to us before leaving. Once they were gone, I got out of my chair and sat next to my father. I doubted that the elders would eavesdrop, but I kept my voice to a whisper. "If this experiment goes as planned, Laxiel will become the most powerful tribe in existence. Your legacy will last forever," I began.
I am glad you see the potential.
He nodded, and I could smell the vanilla of the pleasure my words caused. If this happens, I want you to remove the mandate for me to breed.
That will be impossible. Our entire race wants you to create offspring.
He frowned. What the entire race wants will no longer dictate our actions if we have this army of humans. I finished for him. My father leaned back in his chair and seemed to ponder my request.
Do you prefer women, then?
No, I have not found an appropriate male. Perhaps I will, one day.
You told us that you would select from the current suitors.
He smirked. I have few other options at this point. I could not find one worthy in my mother's lands. Now I am encountering the same here. I would prefer to have more time to decide. Will you agree?
There is tremendous pressure for you to create offspring. We will have a force strong enough to combat our neighbors in, say, 5 years, but having an army large enough to battle distant tribes might take 3 times as long.
You will have to move faster. We can continue this dance for the next 5 years, and I will announce that I do not intend to breed in the near future.
Fine. What other conditions do you have?
He asked. The stables at the south hill of the mansion. I want them. I crossed my arms and licked my lips to taste his scent.
I don't understand your requests. You can use them any time. You have been riding every single morning for the last 2 months.
His scent confirmed the confusion on his face. Yes, but I only want my horses stabled there. I intend to start a breeding program. I don't want anyone to bother me when I am in the stables. Tell the elders to move their horses and your stable master to begin reporting to me.
Breeding horses? Didn't you just kill the one that Lietiv gifted to you?
He smirked, and his scent changed to a bitter citrus peel. Fusik challenged me to tame the beast. It threw me, so I punished it. I shrugged. It did get me thinking about this hobby, and I want the stable to myself. Kyara had seen the massive stallion throw me from its back, and I lost my temper.
That is a simple request. We can build another smithy and stable easily enough and move the human slaves there. Will you need more elven servants to care for the horses?
No, keep the humans there. He raised an eyebrow. If we are betting on this new army, I should make attempts to get used to their foulness. Besides, I've already trained them to work with my horses.
What of the smith? He is very skilled, and the house uses his services frequently.
Have work requests submitted to me. If he has time, I will approve them. I had not thought of the smith's duties.
Very well. I will inform the elders and staff tonight. What else?
I do not care to know any more of these experiments or the training you are conducting on the humans. I do not want to be involved in any meetings or updates that Dluzit and Vertatis give you. Keep me away from it.
Why? You indicated that you agreed with this.
His scent changed to burnt sage. The less I know of the details, the easier it will be for me to keep it from the people you want me to hide it from. I don't need any more knowledge of your experiments. He nodded, and I guessed that he had never considered that if the situation was discovered, I could use my ignorance for protection.
I can agree to that as well.
He laughed.
The news will no doubt crush poor Vertatis. He was counting on showing them off to you one day.
Males around me should be used to disappointment by now. I smirked, and my father laughed louder.
Those words come from your mouth, but they sound like a script written by your mother.
That is all. I will retire now. Good night, Father. I tried to hide my anger at his comparison to my mother.
Good night, daughter.
He nodded as I stood, and I felt him watching me walk out of the dining hall. Instead of walking back to my suite, I decided to head to the garden. The moon was still low in the sky, and while the night was brisk and breezy, the temperature was not unpleasant. I sat on the stone benches amongst the mellow-smelling apple orchard and listened to the soft music drifting from the house. My entourage was gathered in my half-brother's room, and their laughter punctured the music like a second song. It was a shame to let this dress go to waste. I suppose that the garment had already served its purpose. The elders and my father saw me in it. I wondered what Kyair would think of it. He had only seen me in riding pants and traveling blouses. I debated walking down to the stables. I wanted to teach him how to lick and fuck me, and this dress would work perfectly. I thought of his rough hands sliding over the smooth dress on my even smoother skin. Shivers overtook my body, and my entrance clenched around empty wetness. Even fantasizing about him brought me close to climax. It was so deliciously wanton. I sighed and fought to control the arousal in my body. Unfortunately, a journey to the stables at this hour would be too dangerous. If I was seen walking down the hill, there would be questions I could not easily explain away. No one would believe that I would want to go riding at this hour, but I did have some time before anyone would wonder where I was. I wavered for a moment between the two paths and decided on the safer choice, rose from the bench and walked back toward the manor. Valiata would be eager to hear details of the meeting, and she would help take the edge off my arousal. Her tongue would do, until I had my way with Gaier.
Chapter 13 The O'Barney. Why dragons? Why not? Shlara shrugged her shoulders and leaned back against the trunk of the redwood tree we lunched beneath. You don't do anything without a reason. I laughed and took another bite of roast boar. We had caught the animal a few hours ago and cooked it slowly above a smoking stack of cedar bark. It needed a bit more salt, but otherwise tasted rich and flavorful. You never care to hear of the elven's mythos. We had a small pot of pine needle tea brewing near the fire, and she refilled her pewter cup. You picked dragons because of the elven's? Elvens apparently hate the creatures. My tribe used to brand humans with a mark that looked like a dragon whenever one tried to escape. Then they tortured and killed them. I nodded at her words and let her pour me another cup of the tea. The cook site and sheltering grove of trees perched high on a cliff face that overlooked the ocean. Currents were mild, and the waves made a soothing murmur as they caressed the rocky face of the shore. The sun would set in a few hours, and we hoped to catch the last light of the day when it danced across the water. When I escaped with my people, I went to sleep every night, worried that we would be caught. Perhaps that is another reason I picked the dragon image. The elven legends say they were cunning and once led vast armies against their gods. Stories told to frighten slaves, I shook my head. Maybe, but I won't rule out their existence just because I haven't seen one. She smiled and stretched her arms up against the trees. Her new leather and chain armor squeaked when it rubbed against itself. Within a few months, it would be broken in and make little noise. I think each of us has chosen a fitting totem. How so? I asked. Malik values teamwork, so a wolf who hunts in packs works for him. Alexia is like a snake because she is sleek and silent and often goes unnoticed until she strikes. Gorbani and Thayer's symbols are the most fitting. We both laughed at their similarities to a ram and bear. Even your emblem is appropriate. You are bringing death to our enemies, she said to me. I nodded and leaned back on the moss-covered rock near the fire. Silence sat between us for a few minutes as we both studied the sea. "Thank you for joining me today," I said to her. "Of course, you know I would do anything for you, especially if it means we have some time alone." I nodded and turned back to the ocean to hide my smile. Today marked the anniversary of her promotion last year to commander. Since that time, she had made too many improvements in the army for me to count. A ship, I pointed out into the water, where the vessel skimmed across the surface of the dark waves. It was 3, maybe 4 miles away, so I could only make out a few oars. I don't see one. Where are you looking? Directly west, where the clouds meet. Point to it again. She crouched on the boulder next to me, with her cheek pressed up against mine. Her skin smelled of leather oil, pine needles, and cedar. The closeness to her made my heart beat quicker, but I tried to ignore it while I pointed out to the horizon. Green sail and orange hull. Looks like there are people at the oars and on the deck. I had only seen a few small boats in my life. Elvins didn't care much for sailing and left most of the ocean uncharted. I don't see a boat. Seems odd that Elvins would be that far out. She leaned forward next to me and shielded her eyes from the setting of the sun. Then she moved her face closer to my arm. My eyes aren't as good as yours. She sat back next to me with a shrug. Her indifference surprised me. She must have been interested in discussing why I asked her to join me here. I continued to study the boat. Behind me, I heard Schlara sip her tea and cut herself more boar meat. The vessel crested a final wave and disappeared over the horizon. The sun was low in the sky, and the water reflected its orange light. "Are we spending the night out here?" Schlara asked. I was thinking about it. "Oh." Her cheeks reddened against the twilight, and she glanced back to the fire nervously. It reminded me of the time she first came to my tent to introduce herself, a year and a half ago. "I spend time with all of my commanders. I haven't had the opportunity to talk with you much outside of our daily tasks. This will give us a chance for us to become better friends." "I would like that." She smiled and pulled her hair back from one side of her head to expose her neck to me. Her hands stayed on the long, dark brown locks and absently stroked them. "Me too. Thayer and I have known each other for what feels like an eternity. We escaped our tribe together. I have known Alexia almost as long. Shortly after Thayer and I formed the army with Entis, we were scouting and found her being attacked by Elvins." "I've never heard about that from her. She is quiet about her past. I asked your other commanders about you, but they didn't tell me much. I put the pieces together. They were raping her?" I nodded, grateful she had changed the subject quickly back to Alexia. My other commanders did not tell her much about me, because they knew little about my life as a slave. Even Thayer and I had not known each other until we were forced together in the Elven army. I never spoke of my family, or Iolorothi. That happened in our tribe often. Fortunately, my family was placed in the fields working the farm, and I had very little interaction with the main estate. Farming is physically demanding. It must have been difficult. Schlara had joined our army after leading a few hundred of her people across the wilderness in search of us. They were all starving, and would have only lasted a few more weeks had she not found us when she did. As thin as she had been, she did not have the hardened look of someone who had borne hundreds of hours of hard labor outdoors. I was more involved with the animals of the tribe. We would use pigs, goats, and sheep to prepare the land for planting. It helps reduce human labor and increase food production. Thayer and I used to handle the logistics of food production for the army. Alexia took over, and along with Gorbani, had managed to feed the army for many years. Schlara's methods had helped us immensely, and we almost never needed to worry about feeding the army now. "Of course," she continued, "it makes it harder when we are always on the move. If we could stay in one place for a few years, we could feed an army 20 times our size. You and Alexia will have to figure out a way. I plan on the army being 100 times larger than it is now, but we must keep moving. It protects us from discovery and helps us stage more successful attacks." "I can just see it," she laughed. "It will be a logistical nightmare. You might as well promote me now to General of the Latrines." "I like that title," I laughed with her. Instead of dragons on your armor, we'll etch mushrooms, and your reports will carry rakes and shovels instead of spears. Ugh, she moaned. Our helmets will come with perfumed scarves to wrap around our noses, and the boots will be more like galoshes. It will be hard to recruit people, but easy to train them, I said, and our laughter echoed into the night. Speaking of shit and latrines, she wiped a tear of laughter from her eye. I've designed a new outhouse. It should help us turn the waste into compost quicker. I left the designs back at the camp, but I can tell you about it now, if you wish. Sure, I agreed, and we spent the next hour going over her idea. It seemed promising, so I gave her permission to borrow carpenters and build a few outhouses. Despite the amount of time we devoted to discussing shit, this has been a fun night, she said at last, when the conversation had slowly turned to discussing the lay of the night sky. I was nervous when you asked me to come with you. I grunted and sipped my tea. Spiced wine would have gone better with the boar, and I wished I had brought some. Then again, Entis swore pine needle tea was the source of all of his power. Tomorrow morning we'll head back. We'll try to do this every couple of months. I have a strong friendship with the rest of my commanders, and I want the same with you. Is a friendship all you want from me? Her voice was soft, not a whisper, but not much more. That and dedication, the same traits you and I discussed when you first came to the camp. I looked past the fire to her and saw her green eyes aglow with the orange light. Her heart was beating quickly. I am grateful to be your commander and serve in the army. I had my doubts about being promoted, especially after the thrashing you gave my team last year. You are cocky. So are you, she replied back with a smile. You have proven yourself to me, Shlara. Continue to do so, and your desire to be my best general will be fulfilled. I looked away from her eyes and back into the fire. What if I have other desires? Her voice was husky. I knew what she hinted at. Shlara had not outright admitted her feelings for me, but had done more than hint at them several times. It was part of the reason I had hesitated to spend time alone with her. I didn't want to give her the wrong idea. Entis had disagreed, and my mentor had encouraged me to treat her as I did my other commanders. Everything will come to us after the Elvens are destroyed, I said plainly. I did not meet her gaze. I expected that answer, she sighed. Unless there is something else you wish to do tonight, we should get some sleep. The sooner I help you destroy the Elvens, the better. She lay her bedroll down between mine and the fire. For a second, I debated telling her to move it a bit farther away, perhaps to the other side of the campfire. But then I decided against it. Agreed. I curled up on the mat next to her and listened to the ocean's lullaby for a few minutes before sleep took me into darkness. Chapter 14. Kyair. The sound of the ocean woke me from my slumber. I rolled toward the campfire and sighed. I doubted Shlara would mind if I took a few extra minutes of sleep before we broke our fast and journeyed back to the army. Despite the full night's rest, I was exhausted. My bedroll felt like a solid piece of marble. Your habits remain as I recall. The voices echoed in my head. I jumped to my feet and realized that I was not on the cliff overlook camping with Shlara. Instead, I lay at the feet of the dragon statue on the dais. What I had thought was the campfire was the eerie blue light of the braziers. The sound of the ocean from my dream was the flow of water that crashed into the pool from the dragon statue's mouth. There was no movement from the stone dragon, or any sound from the rest of the caravan where I suspected the thousands of lizard spider creatures waited for me. I turned up to the eyes of the statue and pondered whether the voice had actually come from it. "How long have I been asleep?" I asked cautiously. My words hung in the air and then were lost in the sound of the falling water. "How do I explain time to you? You have been asleep for eternity." They were whispers in my head. Each voice spoke at a different tempo, creating a disorienting echo. My brain started to hurt. "What are you?" "You recall so little. It is disappointing, but foreseen. Name me now, and I will carry that title until you forget me again." "I don't understand." The voices felt as if they came from the statue, but I didn't really hear them. They just slammed into my brain like a punch from the back of my head. "You do not want to understand. Maybe you wish not to." "Mulakana Teal." The word escaped my mouth as I exhaled. "Yes," the voices hissed and purred with pleasure. "You have not forgotten your servant." "How are you my servant? How do I know your name?" There was still no movement from the statue, but I expected it to come alive at any second and attempt to destroy me. "I followed your instructions. None of your enemies have come before you, not the Obarni, their servants, or my traitorous siblings. Why would the Obarni come here before me? Who are their servants? You asked me to guard this world from them. Then half an eternity passed. I wondered if you forgot about your servant. Anger came, anger left. Fear came, silence came. My bones returned to this world. Only my dreams are here. They know more than I did." "What do your dreams know?" Nothing these voices said made any sense to me, and I wondered why I had even bothered to ask it another question. "They know why you never relieved me of my task. They know why you have finally come to this world. The reconciliation is close at hand." Reconciliation? Pain shot through my head again. Mistakes will be accounted for. The beings will be set free or damned. Whose mistakes? Beings? I don't understand. "She knows you are in this form. Now she sends her minions after you. They will take the ovule to her, and all will be lost. They don't want to take the ovule from me. They offered me one to leave this world. Viernine had tried to give me the leather backpack which contained the ovule. You struggle to forget, while my dream fades. I wish I could tell you more, but once I am gone, the creatures will return for your flesh, and then she will be victorious. Leave this place. Protect the ovule." "How do I leave?" "You created life with water. My dream fades now. Farewell, Master. Remember me as your greatest servant, for I was the last of my kind." The voices whispered in my ear, as soft as Jesme, when we lay in the cave those many months ago. The blue light faded from the sapphire gems in the statue's eyes. Their intensity was mirrored by the magical torches that sat upon the dais. Their light also began to fade, and along with it, the distant rasps of the lizard creatures rose. Fuck. The light extinguished suddenly, and I was plunged into absolute blackness. The screams of the creatures echoed through the cavern like trumpets. I could hear the ocean sound of their claws scraping off the walls as they ran toward me. The noise blended with the roar of the waterfall flowing from the effigy's mouth. The sound of the pool made me consider what Mulakana Teal said of water. It must be draining somewhere, or it would have overflowed. The approaching monsters made my heart race in my chest. If this did not work, I would die. Fuck. Even if the pool did have a drain, there was no telling if I could hold my breath long enough to make it to wherever it ended. I had escaped the elvens before, using the dark river beneath Castle Naya. I could hold my breath for upwards of 10 minutes, but there was no surer way to kill an Obarni or elven than drowning. Lack of air cut off the functioning of our brain, rendering us unable to heal. This was why both our races feared the ocean. The lizard spiders grew closer. I could not stay here. The water was a dangerous choice, but it still gave me a chance. I took a few deep breaths, then dove into the pool at the dragon's feet. The water was cold. For a precious second, I froze in shock and almost lost the air in my lungs. I pushed through and swam toward the bottom of the pool. There was a strong current, and I felt some of the stress of my choice leave my mind. I found the tunnel at the bottom of the pool. I couldn't see anything through the darkness, but the current was strong, and I let it carry me downward in its embrace. I could hear nothing but the sound of my heart hammering in my chest and the pulling swish of the water. I reached out my hands and felt the sides of a smooth tunnel. It was probably 4 feet in diameter, wide enough for me not to worry about getting caught and trapped. I counted. The water grew colder. My blood felt like ice. I remembered sitting under the waters of the river while I waited for Jesme's 3 elven captors to ford it. These waters were even colder. Numbness filled me everywhere, and I pulled more earth into my body in an effort to warm myself with magic. 60. Where would this flow of water leave the mountains? I guessed it would be at the mouth of the river that fed the bottom of the valley. If Virnine's warriors were still at the keep, I could avoid them and make my way back to the castle. Then I remembered what the dragon said to me. I needed to get the ovule from Virnine. I needed to keep it from the Empress. 120. There were other ovules. I had left one beneath the castle in Naya. There was the one Caneth had used to bring his warriors to this world. The Empress must have some as well, since she had traveled here through the Radical with her entire army. Why did the dragon want me to keep one ovule? 180. Nadia must have also had an ovule. The thought struck me suddenly. She brought me through a Radical. Or was I already on this world, frozen in sleep? Pog said I was sleeping when he saw me, and he spoke words to awake me. I should have asked him what those words had been. Nadia had taught him the words. She told him what to do. 240. How did Nadia know where I was? How did she know to awaken me, or how to do it? If she had not used an ovule, did she wield some other sort of magic? My brain spun, and then I realized that I actually was spinning in the current. I was caught in a riptide. My foot found a wall, and I pushed off of it, praying to whatever luck I had that I would launch myself in the direction that would take me out of this endless, icy hell. 300. Maybe there were other objects named ovules the dragon spoke of. What did the name mean? It had something to do with plants, seeds, flowers. Schlara had spoken to Alexia once about a garden. They had used the word. 360. My heart was throbbing, and I felt the uncomfortable tightness in my chest that indicated I would need to breathe soon. The current wasn't moving fast enough, so I took a few hesitant kicks with my legs to speed along my travel. What if the ovule was a person? The thought struck me suddenly from the darkness and made my mind recoil as if I had actually been punched. 420. How did I know the dragon's name? It came to my mouth unbidden, but as soon as I spoke it, I knew it was correct. There was something about the creature that felt familiar. It was the way it spoke to me. It felt like I had conversed with it before. But that was impossible. The feeling in my stomach when I said its name was the same feeling I had when I guessed that the ovule was actually a person. I knew I was right, but I did not know why. 480. I slammed into a wall and almost lost the saved air in my lungs. I had been holding out my hands in the direction the water pushed me, but I wasn't prepared for the speed at which I hit the smooth surface. I skipped across the rock with a grunt of surprise and then bounced into the flow again. If I drowned down here, I wouldn't even know it. Everything was already black. 540. If the ovule was a person, who would it be? The dragon said that she was sending minions after me. He said they would take the ovule, and all would be lost. I must protect the ovule. But who was the ovule? Who was the dragon afraid of? 600. I was missing something. I could feel that I was close to understanding what the dragon wanted. His words did not make any sense, but if the ovule was a person, then Mulakana Teal inferred that I knew her. Her. Nadia. 660. If any person could be an ovule, it would be the Duchess. Other than my daughter, she was the only elven-human hybrid known to exist. The signs were there. She was able to retrieve me from the Radical without an ovule because she was the ovule. Perhaps the ovules were named after those people who could operate the Radicals without the aid of the magical orbs. I had not understood it completely, but I had sensed Nadia's power when I changed her into an Obarni. 720. But who did I need to protect Nadia from? If Virnine was being honest with me, Talaxthi had already captured Nadia. Mulakana Teal said that she knew I was in this form. What did he mean? Who was she? 780. My lungs were screaming, demanding to breathe. Every heartbeat was agony. The current continued to push me, faster than before, but there was still no hint of light, no sign of air, just fast-moving water in the darkness of my mind. 840. Fuck, I was tired. Exhausted. My body hurt beyond compare. I wanted to breathe. Please, let me breathe. Nadia, Jesme, Shlara, Malik, Alexia, Thayer, Gorbani, Graykin, Beltor, Danor, Entis, Pog, Iolarothi. Please let me breathe. The darkness is too much. The pain is too great. 900.
Chapter 15. Iolarothi. How is your ride? Radyara handed me a cup of steaming tea as soon as I walked into my suite. Glorious, I sighed. It had been only half an hour or so since I left Kyair back in the stables, and the smoky scent of him still lingered on me. I took a sip of the tea. While it was warm and delicious, I wanted to celebrate with something more. I desire a bottle of wine. Yes, mistress, I will fetch one. First, have a bath started, then the wine. I said after a second thought. She nodded, and I sat at the small table in the foyer of my suite, sipping the tea and thinking of Kyair's facial expressions and joy during his first ride. My lover had a natural talent for riding. Had he been born an elven, he may have had the necessary years to master the discipline, though he was young for their species and still had plenty of time left to master whatever skill he might choose. Humans were not allowed to choose, and they certainly weren't allowed to ride horses. "The water is ready, mistress." Radiata's husky voice interrupted my thoughts. One of my servants entered from the hallway with a bottle of wine on a platter spread with cut apples and cheese. Radiata was very thoughtful. I set aside my tea and moved into the steaming tub. The hot water was a fitting end to a session of riding, exploring ancient ruins, and lovemaking. "You seem lost in thought." "As lost as any single-born could be." I thought about asking her to leave, but then I reconsidered. I already missed Kyair and didn't want to be alone. Pour yourself a glass and share the meal with me. I pointed at the platter. There wasn't a second glass, but Reliata found one quickly and then did as I asked. What made it glorious? She asked. The ride. You said it was glorious? I rode out to the ruins to the southwest. That is a dangerous place to go, especially alone. Her scent changed to lemons. There was a carrion beast lurking around, but it knew better than to come near me. I smiled slightly and took a bite of apple and cheese. Now you are speaking complete foolishness. Next you will tell me there were wisps dancing through the ruins and you frolicked amongst them. She shook her head, and her dark blue-black hair rippled beautifully. I was about to reply, but a knock sounded at the distant door of my foyer. Reliata excused herself and moved to answer it. I closed my eyes again and leaned back enough in the tub to soak most of my hair. I imagined the water was Kair's fingers running against my scalp. Then I thought of his hands rubbing over the rest of my wet body. I realized I was holding my breath and let it out in a long sigh. It had only been a few hours since we fucked, yet I wanted him again. Would I ever grow bored with the human? I wondered if I was only attracted to him because of the danger our couplings presented, but then dismissed the idea. It was his scent that first attracted me to him, and his other attributes only increased my desire to be around him. My left hand slid down my stomach and between my legs. Thoughts of him were rousing me to distraction, and my fingers gently caressed the soft, sensitive nub of flesh at the top of my entrance. His penis was long and thick. Even when I was dripping wet, we almost couldn't fit him into my tunnel. Mistress, Reliata was standing next to the tub. Her scent was bitter with concern. What? One of my servants overheard Ripthi conversing with Alvor a few moments ago. Vuma's son said that he witnessed you returning from a ride with the human. Coldness filled my stomach instantly, and the chill fought against the warmth of the bathwater, numbing my skin. I always paid careful attention to ensure that there were no witnesses to my excursions, and tonight had been no different. What else was said? I realized that there was a servant standing behind the dark-haired woman. Reliata gestured to the girl, and she stepped forward. They seem drunken, mistress. The servant's red eyes were wide, and her rotting fear scent overpowered the lavender oils of my bath. Give me your opinion only when I ask for it. Tell me exactly what was said. I tried to keep my temper in check. My nails dug into the porcelain of the tub. Yes, mistress. She bowed with her stutter. Ripthi returned to his guest room a quarter of an hour ago with Alvor. They both carried bottles of wine and were angry. Ripthi was speaking of... She glanced at Reliata and then back at me. A bitch that was manipulating them while she fucked disgusting humans. Alvor asked for more detail, and Ripthi said that he saw you return from a late-night ride with the human that worked in the stables. What did Alvor say to that? I tried to force my body to calm. Alvor said that he couldn't believe it, but then Ripthi began to speak of why you haven't chosen a suitor yet for breeding. He said that you must be some sort of abomination that preferred to fuck animals instead of elven men. Then he said he was going to talk to his father and the chieftain about your sickening behavior. Alvor said he should be cautious and that he could not believe you would be with the human until he witnessed it himself. They seemed to realize I was in the room at that point, and they yelled at me to leave. I came here immediately. Did they see you walk in this direction? I asked. No, I closed the door behind me. Go fetch my half-brother. Tell him I require his presence immediately. Yes, mistress. She seemed relieved by the dismissal and bowed low before running out of the bathroom. Is this true? Reliata crossed her arms, and her scent betrayed her shock. I got out of the tub and began to dry off my slick body. Do you think it is true? I glared at her and motioned for her to retrieve my bathrobe. I want to say no. She handed me the robe, and I quickly donned it. So you do believe that I'm fucking humans? I will believe what you tell me, mistress. She bit her lip, and I could smell her fear now, like rotten vegetables. I won't beat you. You are the only friend I have in this place. The only person I can trust. I turned to face her and laid my hands on her shoulders. Do you think I would fuck a human? No, Mistress, I wouldn't believe it. But you have been acting distant for the last 6 months. You have been spending more time alone at the stables. And you have not made love with me as often as you used to. I simply assumed you had another lover you preferred and were meeting them at the stables. Did you have a spy follow me? She looked shocked at my question, but her scent bloomed with bitter fear and terror, a reeking compost pile. Yes. Her voice was a whisper. She knew better than to lie now. I should have guessed that Reliara already knew of Kair. She had her nose in everything transpiring within the tribe. That was why she was so useful to me. So? I drew my tongue across my lips. I am sorry, Mistress. I did it to protect you. I wanted to make sure you were safe. You know of the human, then? Yes. For how long? 4 months. I nodded and motioned for her to follow me out of the bathroom, my bedroom, and into the foyer. Reliara could have betrayed me, but she had not. I trusted her before, but now her loyalty was proven. Sit. I pointed at the plush leather chair next to mine. Who else knows? I asked. The spy was one of my best servants. After he told me I had him killed and his body fed to the pigs, he was not missed. I nodded. Reliara ran the servants of the mansion as well as personally attending me. What do you advise? I exhaled and looked at the beautiful woman. She was not often caught off guard, but I could tell that she was not expecting me to ask her this. She probably believed I would kill her. If the other tribes or elders find out that you were with a human, it will be a horrible loss of power for you and your father. You will be forced to choose a mate for you immediately, and whoever mates with you will request that the human be tortured and killed. Ridiculous. Males fuck human females all the time. None of those women are killed. I felt anger and frustration fill my stomach. Fuck, I should have been more careful. You are the single-born. You are supposed to be breeding and have been spinning stories to keep from mating. If it is because of this human, then he will be removed. His life means nothing. So what should I do? Pick a suitor right now. Make the announcement immediately. I can't. I sighed and gripped the arms of the chair, deciding tonight would hurt my father's venture with the human army. He needed another few years, nor was that what I wanted. The thought of mating with any of the available males made me ill. What are my other options? Deny it? She leaned forward and sudden passion entered her voice. Ripley did not see you fuck the human. He has no proof. He said he saw you riding with the human, but it was dark and he was drinking. Tell your brother to lie and say he was out with you. Or tell another one of your suitors to lie and then move his room closer to yours. It is past time you showed favor to one of the males anyway. A loud knock sounded on my door, and Reliara rose to answer it. My brother entered the foyer. Sit. I pointed at the chair next to me and across from where Reliara sat. Who are you fucking? Excuse me? He tilted his head. You stink of sex. Didn't I ask you to tell me who you would be mating with?
Not yet.
Fuck. I looked at Reliara, and she grimaced as well. Daranyet was of Alvor's family, and she would not lie to him.
I'm sorry, I should have told you earlier.
Gretna waved his hands apologetically. Were you with her all night? Reliara demanded.
Sister, why does your servant address me in this manner?
His voice rose and he looked at me. Answer her fucking question! We are dealing with a difficult problem now that I need you to help me with. I seethed at him. He looked shocked and his scent changed to fear.
Yes, I was with her all night. What happened?
Ripley believes I am consorting with a human. He has convinced Alvor as well.
Why would he think that?
He looked confused. I've been teaching the human stable boy to ride our horses at night. The partial truth came to my lips easily and would not cloud my scent. Ripley was spying on me and observed us together. He is convinced that I am fucking the human.
Why would you teach a human to ride?
I wanted a better skilled stable hand.
So have one of our kind in the stable.
That is a good suggestion, brother. I should have consulted with you earlier about my stable management. I wanted to strangle him.
Ah, sister. He laughed slightly and sat forward. I know you sometimes think me a fool, but I have been around horses enough to know elvens are just better than humans at these tasks. I can help you pick someone. Actually, you probably need two for a stable the size of yours.
Perhaps after this situation is handled, I will welcome your help with that. I turned to Relyadra and almost laughed as she struggled to keep her face impassive. My half-brother really was an idiot.
I can help with your suitors.
He stood up suddenly and stretched. How? Relyadra asked.
I'll go talk to them. Tell them that you were training a human in secret, and that will be that.
Relyadra and I exchanged looks, and she shrugged with her eyebrows raised. I believe they are in Ripthi's room, she said to him.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it. Let's talk again over breakfast.
He sighed and swaggered toward the exit of my suite. Relyadra and I looked at each other, and she hinted at half a smile. This just might work. Grednil opened the door to the hallway and let out a surprised yelp.
Get out of my way, boy!
My father growled and stepped into the hallway. Grednil quickly moved to the side, and the chieftain stomped past him. My father's face was red with frustration, and his hands clenched at his side. I could smell his anger like burnt metal.
What are you playing at, girl?
He spat the question.
What are you... Get out!
He turned to Relyadra and Grednil with a scream of thunder. They scurried away from his hot voice and exited the room quickly. Once the doors slammed shut, he turned back and pointed his finger at me.
Are you trying to ruin everything this tribe is working for? Are you a fucking idiot? A human? By the dead gods, girl, I thought you were smarter than this.
Father, I can-
Shut the fuck up!
He screamed again and seemed to vibrate with his vocal cords. His massive fist slammed into the small table I used for breakfast, and the wood shattered into hundreds of splinters. I pulled the world to me and stood up from my chair. Killing him would be a worse mistake than fucking Kyair, but I wouldn't let the man attack me without consequence.
Fix this tomorrow. Kill this human you are dallying with and focus on the task at hand. You better make it convincing or I'll line up all of your suitors and let them have turns inseminating you.
You wouldn't dare. My teeth clenched so hard that my jaw ached. I could just kill him now. The world was coursing through my body. One flick of concentration and he would burst into flame. I could leave this place tonight. I could live on my own. If anyone came after me, I would destroy them.
Try me, Iolarathi.
He stepped closer and our noses made contact. His eyes burned like silver suns. He was bigger than I was, but I knew I was much stronger. His breath came out in puffs of steam and filled my nostrils with the scent of his mouth. There was no fear there, just anger.
I'm sick of your games. Kill the slave tomorrow morning, or you'll see what I am like when I am really angry. Your insolence has almost cost me everything.
Kill him. Kill the fucker. You want to be free? The voice in my head was my own and repeated the desires of my heart. Fine, I spat. He inhaled to taste my scent, nodded slowly, and turned to walk out of my room without another word. When the door opened, I saw a small assembly of guards out in the hallway that had responded to the shouting. Relyadra was holding them back from the door, and the group parted to let my father pass. I sat down on the chair again and looked at the destroyed table. It had once been beautiful, but was quite far beyond repair now. Why hadn't I killed him? For the same reason I never left my mother's estate and set out on my own. Will you do it? Relyadra was at my side and placed her hand on my shoulder. Yes. It is for the best. Your suitors will believe your words if they accompany the action. I know. Why was there coldness in my stomach? It was just a human. Yes, Kyair was different than all the others, but he was still just an animal. I would forget about him soon enough and occupy myself with other things. Tell my suitors and brother to join me for breakfast tomorrow. Do not invite the maidens. I'll kill him after we eat. Very well, mistress. Get me a new table. Nicer than this one was. I will retire for the rest of the morning. Yes, mistress. Her voice followed me into my room. My robe was only slightly damp from the aftermath of the bath. I slid out of it, tossed it across the carved back of my dressing chair, and then dove between the satin sheets of my massive bed. I heard Reliata issuing curt orders to various servants, but the specifics didn't bother to enter my mind. My mother would probably find out about this ordeal with Kaer. Perhaps my father wouldn't tell her, but I had no doubt that she had spies in this tribe already. What would my